All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world, and happy, what day is it? Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's Tuesday, as a matter of fact, December 23rd, 2025. I'm a little distracted this morning. You may have noticed silver just hit $70. That is 7-0. You read that right in the headline, guys. Nope, not a typo. Jack didn't fat finger anything this morning. $70. Holy crap. Where's my silver squeeze guys at? Where's my guys from back in the day, the early days when we were making the videos on Reddit? Did we think we were going to see 70? Yeah, I think most of us did. I think most of us probably thought we were going to see it back in 2022 or 2023, but holy crap, now that it's here, it's a little bit of disbelief. Metal just keeps grinding higher, up in a straight line. Hey, gold is along for the ride. Front month gold futures contract hit $4,500 last night. Metal's just on an absolute tear here. Now, look, guys, I'm starting to get a little worried. I'm not going to lie. Like, I like to see it. You guys may have heard. I don't know if I said this once or twice, but I like the shiny. I've mentioned that here on this channel. It's not supposed to go up in a straight line forever. And we've gone vertical. We've seen silver go vertical before. And we've seen what comes after silver goes vertical. It's never pretty. So some caution is in order here. Enjoy it. Be careful on leverage. All right. Don't go make levered bets. Don't go mortgage your house and pull some kind of Michael Saylor infinite glitch BS here. We've been here before. All the things that are pushing metal higher right now will likely continue in the future. But we have seen the price of silver defy belief in the past. 2011, 1980, for example. Maybe it could happen again here. But we're going to take a look at the chart and we're going to try to guess where it might be going based on the charts. And guys, this is emphasis try here because we're in uncharted territory. Anybody who's like, oh, I looked at the technicals and I know exactly where it's going to this level, is full of it. We can all guess. We can make informed guesses based on other data and other chart patterns. But at this point here, nobody freaking knows. By the way, copper along for the ride. All-time high in copper again. We're going to have a lot to talk about copper supply and demand dynamics. Another reason to be careful. There's some things in copper that give me the heebie-jeebies a little bit. And platinum is ripping once again, $2,200 for platinum. Once again, shout out to Bob Coleman. Monster call on platinum earlier this year, back in May on this channel. Another big story going on this morning, and it is a very big one. It's something I've been calling for a while. I don't cover it as closely. We have talked a lot about this on my Patreon Zoom call over the last few months. Shipbuilding in the United States. There have been two big announcements in the last few days since Friday. And Huntington Ingalls stock is ripping. Year to date, it's up over 80%. It's up several percent, several days in a row here. And, you know, this isn't a tech stock. This is a shipyard, a shipbuilder. They're not supposed to trade like tech stocks. But finally, we've got some movement in the shipbuilding front. We've had two announcements in the last few days. And keep in mind, this is all against the backdrop of the cancellation of the Constellation-class frigate, which was the latest in a long line of Navy procurement CFs. That includes the Constellation frigate years behind schedule, over budget, analysis paralysis. The engineers can't control themselves. Both classes of littoral combat ships, which were nicknamed the little crappy ship because they were abject failures, absolute design fiascos, overpriced, undercapable boats. The Zumwalt class destroyer, that's bigger than a cruiser. It's ugly. It was designed around a gun that nobody in the world makes the ammo for, and therefore it's really just an expensive decoration, a paperweight. We're trying to figure out a use for the Zumwalts now. All of these ships have just been a procurement disaster. Well, on Friday, we got the announcement from the Navy that they had awarded the contract to Huntington Ingalls for a new class of frigate. They're calling it the FFX, based on the Legend-class National Security Cutter. It's a Coast Guard cutter. It's a Coast Guard cutter painted gray to make it look like a Navy ship. And so far, that's really all we know about it. We're going to talk a lot about this, but the Coast Guard, this new Legend-class frigate, we'll call it for lack of a better term, has no VLS sails, the Mark 41 vertical launch system. That is what basically all surface warfare ships are built around in the Navy. And this new frigate isn't going to have those, which means it's going to be undersized and underpowered. It's not going to be the kind of boat that's going to go toe-to-toe with the Chinese in the South China Sea, which we hope doesn't happen, right? I mean, look, we're going to talk a lot about defense and defense spending today. Don't mistake this for the beating of the war drums. I hope this doesn't happen, but the enemy gets a vote and they may decide to start this war anyway. We may not have a choice in whether or not we get into this. So let's hope it doesn't happen. But this frigate won't be much use. It might be used elsewhere where we could free up other destroyers to go then fight in the South China Sea. That may be a use for this boat. But look, we just got to get a hull in the water at this point. We cannot build ships. We have forgotten how. It was our biggest strength in World War II. It's how we were able to overcome the Japanese, who in the early days of the war had a far superior fleet to ours. But eventually, they just couldn't keep up with our shipbuilding capacity. This time around, those roles are reversed. The Chinese have a big advantage. And I mean a big advantage. We're going to show you just how big. Now, the other ship class that was just announced is the Trump-class battleship. I kid you not, the Trump-class, as part of the Golden Fleet. Okay, let's just get this out of the way. President Trump can't help himself here. Everything's got to be gold. Everything's got to be named after him. Let's move past this. The Trump-class battleship, the specs that they have put out there, this thing is going to be a freaking beast. Like half the size of an aircraft carrier beast, 3 to 4 times the size of our next biggest surface warfare ship. This thing is going to be gigantic. I don't know if they're going to build it or they'll be able to build it. All I know is the Navy has to do something. They have to remember how to build ships, and the engineers have got to control themselves. They have to stop changing the freaking design of the boat halfway through so that what they end up with resembles nothing like what they set out to build. It's too late here, guys. I mean, we're running out of time, but for all intents and purposes, it's already too late. Even these first frigates that we're supposed to build, they're supposed to hit the water by 2028. And everything I've read, all the military academics, all the studies, all the think tanks, they all say the Chinese are going to roll in 2027. Which means even these boats, if we start building them now, and if we finish them on schedule, they won't be here in time for the opening salvos of this fight. So for many perspectives, it's already too late here. But we got to do something. We got to remember how to build boats. All right. Also going on this morning, President Trump has targeted defense firms, saying he wants them to stop buying back stock and start building factories to expand military production capacity. You know, this giant Trump-class battleship, which is just going to be like this big floating arsenal of missiles, you know what it's going to need? Missiles. A freaking lot of them. And we can't build them. Something we learned in the Red Sea. Our missiles are very good, but they're also very expensive, and we can't make enough of them, which is why ultimately we did not prevail in that conflict in the Red Sea. Even though we won all the battles, we did not win that war. We need to remember how to build missiles as well. So President Trump is saying, yo, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, stop buying back your stock. Build a factory just in case we want to order more missiles. And of course, Lockheed and Raytheon is saying, Mr. President, that's not really how this works. If you guys want more missiles, give us the contract, and then we'll build the factory to satisfy that contract. We're not going to go out and build this factory on spec just in case you need it. We'd rather buy back our stock. And look, the government probably shouldn't be able to force them to do this. I don't really have a good answer here, but I can tell you our defense production capacity is grotesquely undersized for what's coming in 2027. By the way, on all these subjects, I would just like to say a big welcome and howdy and Merry Christmas to all of the Chinese Z-bots in the comments. I love you guys. You show up every time we talk about the Navy, every time we talk about China, the Chinese economy, these adorable comments about China, a number one strong, mightiest dragon. You guys are hilarious. Thank you so much for the engagement, and give my regards to God Emperor Pu. All right. Also going on this morning, the U.S. is probing Megaspeed. That's the big Singapore, the number two purchaser of NVIDIA GPUs in Southeast Asia, saying, hey, guys, your inventory numbers, the data centers you're building, it doesn't match all of the GPUs you're buying. It's almost like those GPUs are really winding up somewhere else. I wonder where that could be. If you said China, congratulations. You've been paying attention. We know you've been selling those GPUs to the Chinese all along. Your numbers just don't make sense. And, well, if you consider the fact that there's probably military applications for these GPUs and the fact that many consider armed conflict with the Chinese to be inevitable, well, that would mean NVIDIA is kind of guilty of treason, wouldn't it? Yeah, that's how that works. Nice. With your Taiwanese American CEO providing the Chinese government with the tools they need to level your home country. Oh, yeah, that's nice. Real nice guy, Jensen Huang. But hey, you know, just go ahead, put on your leather jacket and say some made up crap about AI. I'm sure people are going to love it. Also, Ed Zitron is out with an article this morning talking about GPUs in warehouses. He ran the numbers and all of these projects and all of these NVIDIA sales. And he said, hey, look, here's the amount of GPUs that NVIDIA has sold. Here's the amount of power that has come online for these GPUs. There's a big mismatch. And he suspects that somewhere in America, there are tens of thousands of these things sitting, collecting dust in a warehouse. Oh, my God. Can you imagine if that story breaks? That all of this spending hasn't even been going into data centers. They're just sitting in this Indiana Jones warehouse with the Ark of the Covenant collecting dust. But it's all just been about inflating NVIDIA's earnings, you know, kind of like the stuff Jack has been saying all along. Man, that'd be hilarious. And by hilarious, I mean like absolutely dreadful for the retirement portfolios of the average person, but hilarious nonetheless. President Trump has halted all offshore wind projects. Just by royal decree, apparently. No more offshore wind. Look, I'm not a fan of offshore wind by any measure, but I'm also not a fan of Democrat presidents saying no more nuclear plants or no more gas pipelines or no more coal plants. I hate when politicians do this stuff on the left, and so I don't want to see politicians on the right doing the same thing. That being said, lefties, if you don't like this arbitrary decree of no more windmills, then maybe you should get the hell out of the way and let the pipelines and the nuclear plants get built. What a concept. How about we just build something for crying out loud instead of this NIMBY BS? Also, U.S. GDP came out and grew way more than expected in the third quarter. Big growth, 4.3% versus 3.5% expected. Consumers going into debt, data centers getting built that are never going to get used. That means GDP growth, for better or worse. There it is. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm should you feel so inclined. Oh, right now, stocks. Yeah, 6,800. That's S&P futures. Down 15 points. Modestly negative for the day. Not a lot happening here. Down about 0.25%. By the way, guys, while we're on this subject, there will be a show tomorrow morning, Christmas Eve. Markets are open. That will be the last live stream for the week. We're going to take Christmas off, obviously, and the day after Christmas. We'll be back next week after that one. So I'll see you guys tomorrow, at which point I will wish you a Merry Christmas and then adieu for several days. Right now, the Dow down 124 points, 0.26% in the red, and the NASDAQ leading the way lower off by 78 points or 0.31%. Stocks down across the board, albeit modestly. We've also got the U.S. dollar is a little bit weaker, but it has recovered ever since that GDP read came out here. 98.08 off by 19 basis points. Looking over at the bond market, we got yields are marginally higher this morning. The 30-year yield is at 4.856%, higher by about 1.3 points. The 10-year, 4.192%, that's higher by 2 points and change. The 2-year at 3.538, that's up 3.5 points. And the 1 month is at 3.629, down by a fraction of a point. Looking over at Bitcoin, we are in the red this morning, $87,707 is priced on Coinbase. That's off by about $850 from yesterday. We hit an intraday high of just over 90,000 yesterday, still kind of range bound here, but Bitcoin winner. It's going to be long, dull, and boring. Big question is, will Michael Saylor and all of these treasury companies survive crypto winter? I don't think they will. At least some of them are going to go belly up. Will Saylor go belly up? That's the big one. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. And then the big news this morning is in commodities. Look at those shinies. Look at the metals. I just love it. $44.65 for spot gold this morning. That's up by $22 or about 4.49% higher. February front month gold futures at $4,494. Hitting an overnight high of $45.30. So we had $4,500 gold overnight. We're a little bit below that now, but still up $26, almost $27, or 0.6% higher. And then the big one, look at silver. Oh, my favorite of the shiny, $70.38. Now 39 cents, up another $1.31, 1.88% higher. But wait, there's more. March silver futures, $70.43, higher by $1.87, 2.73% higher. I like the shiny. We're going to look at the charts in a minute here. Let's talk about copper, up another 1.3%, all-time high for copper. Platinum ripping again this morning, up another $152, $2,241 for platinum. Palladium along for the ride, up 7%, $129 higher. It's almost like inflation is coming back because the Fed is printing money. Isn't it just amazing? Also, WTI crude higher by about 8 cents this morning, 0.14%, $58.09 for crude oil. All right, let's look at the charts here, guys. I mean, it's just, why look at the charts? Because it's kind of an exercise in futility here. It's just like, yeah, it's pretty. Number go up, but there's no point in trying to do any kind of TA here, at least not in the gold chart. It looks really nice. I like it, but it doesn't really tell me much. Now, the silver chart is interesting. Let's look at the silver chart because this one does tell me something here. All right, let's just zoom in a little bit here. We're looking at daily candles on the silver chart. All right, and that red line will make sense in a second here. $70.32 here. Now, I don't glean a lot from the dailies on this silver chart, but if we zoom way out, let's set this to weeklies. All right, now this is the closest I can get to any TA on silver. We're going all the way back here, guys, to 1980, that 50-year cup and handle pattern that we've all been watching for years now. All right, I did my best to analyze this cup and handle pattern. All right, we take the difference between the water level in the cup and the bottom of the cup, and then we take that and we add it to the water level, and that's pretty much your price target. And again, this is a 50-year cup and handle pattern, guys. This is not going to play out over the next 5 days. This is not going to play out over the next 2 or 3 weeks. This could take 20 years to materialize, all right? But based on this 50-year cup and handle pattern, I've got a price target for silver of about $93. That's the price target of this pattern. Are we going to 93? I don't know. Probably, eventually. Is it going to be next week or is it going to be 20 years from now? Maybe 30 years from now. I don't know. I am positioned as if it's going to continue going up here, but I'm cautious, guys. Look, we've seen silver go vertical like this, right? You see this vertical move we got right here? We saw it in 2011. What happened afterwards? All right, 10, 15 years of nothing. We saw it in 1980. What happened afterwards? 30 years of nothing. Maybe that's happening again here. Then again, everybody's talking about that. Maybe that means it's not going to happen again. You're noticing a lot of maybes here? Nobody knows. But the price target for this 50-year cup and handle pattern, $93. Now, based on that $93 target for silver, let's talk about gold, where that might go. We're looking at the gold to silver ratio right now. It is at 63.6. All right, silver has done very well relative to gold, especially since April. Silver has outperformed gold, which means the gold to silver ratio has continued to come down. Now, that red line there, I've shown you the guys this for a couple of weeks now. That is 65. That's the average over the last 45 years or so. 65 is about the average that we have seen for gold, for the gold to silver ratio. So let's say we go to that $93 level in silver, and let's say the gold to silver ratio stays at that 45-year average of about 65. $93 silver times 65 ounces of silver to gold would give us a price target for gold of $6,045. And that's just assuming gold trades sideways relative to silver. Gold could underperform or it could outperform. But again, guys, that's my best guess here at trying to say where we're going here is $93 silver and $6,045 gold. And again, that's not like by the end of the year. That's not even by the end of next year. These are 50-year patterns. There's no telling when they're going to play out. Also, copper is ripping this morning. Copper hits 12,000 for the first time as the tariff trade upends markets. Copper hit a fresh all-time high above 12,000 a ton as severe mine outages and trade dislocations linked to President Trump's tariff agenda put the critical industrial metal on course for its biggest annual gain since 2009. Now, I'm a little skeptical of the tariff thing here, guys, to be honest with you, because we put tariffs on finished copper products like pipe, like wire. That was months ago, back in August. There are no tariffs on copper ore. And I thought the question of tariffs on copper ore was resolved. This article is kind of suggesting that tariffs is the reason why this is happening. Maybe this is just TDS reflected at Bloomberg, or maybe it's legitimate. I don't really think tariffs are driving copper ore here, but I could be wrong about that. Prices rose as much as 1% to $12,044 a ton on the London London Metals Exchange, extending a rally that has lifted prices by more than a third this year. The possibility that Trump will place tariffs on the metal has been a central factor driving prices higher, with a surge in U.S. imports through the year thrusting manufacturers elsewhere into a bidding war to keep hold of supplies. So they're saying there's been this surge of U.S. buying and stockpiling of ore. So I guess that's really a thing. But we put tariffs on the finished product to try to stimulate some kind of smelters and manufacturing of copper pipe and wire in the States. If that's really your goal, then putting tariffs on the finished ore makes no sense whatsoever, because we don't have copper mines in this country, or at least not many, and we're not really trying to build them. We get most of our copper domestically, or at least from the Western Hemisphere, from South America and from Canada. So tariffs on copper ore would be counterproductive to the stated goal of the tariffs on finished copper products. The impact on global trade flows has been so extreme that prices have rallied even when the underlying usage has deteriorated rapidly in China, which consumes about half of the world's copper. That's something I've been talking about for years, that China copper usage. Investors often view copper as a barometer for global industrial activity, but the slowdown in China has done little to put the brakes on the rally. There's a growing expectation that prices will keep ratcheting higher as traders ship even greater volumes of copper to the U.S. to front-run potential tariffs. I don't think those tariffs are coming, to be honest with you. And the fact that these prices are rallying even as demand deteriorates from the Chinese crackdown on overcapacity, that's a risk here. That means copper prices could reverse rather violently all of a sudden if those tariffs don't materialize. And I don't think they will. But there have been severe disruptions on the supply side too, with outages in mines across the Americas, Africa, and Asia, prompting warnings that the market is on the cusp of a major deficit that will add further fuel to the rally. Deutsche Bank warns that output from the world's largest miners will drop 3% this year and could fall again in 2026. That also means less silver coming out of the ground, guys. A lot of silver comes from copper mines. And if copper mine output is going to be down 3%, you better believe silver mine output will be down, or at least incidental silver mining output will be down. While global inventories are sufficient for now, analysts at Morgan Stanley are warning that the global copper market will face its most severe deficit in more than 20 years next year. The bank expects demand to exceed supply by about 600,000 tons next year and see shortfalls worsening from there. So some mixed signals coming from the copper market, but for now, prices at all-time highs. Now, let's talk about the big one this morning, shipbuilding. All right. And again, guys, like all of this, I want to preface by saying, I hope this doesn't happen. World War III will be catastrophic for humanity. There's still time to stop it. I hope it doesn't happen. But projecting American weakness is the easiest way to make sure it does happen. And so the way you win the peace is by preparing for the worst. The shipbuilder stock soars to a fresh record as company wins contract to produce a new type of Navy frigate. And I have to preface this by saying I own Huntington Ingalls stock. So there's my full disclosure. Okay, where are we? Shares of military shipbuilder Huntington Ingalls Industries were up sharply on Monday, building on Friday's surge that came after the U.S. Navy announced it had selected the company to design and build a new class of small warships. The gains on Monday came as President Trump also said that he had approved plan for the U.S. Navy to construct new Trump-class warships intended to serve as flagships for the nation's naval fleet. Trump on Monday also criticized the prime defense contractors for being too slow on production. He said he would meet with those contractors in Florida next week to discuss production schedules. Secretary of the Navy John Phelan said in a news release Friday that his branch of the military will be acquiring a new frigate class based on Huntington Ingalls Legend class national security cutter, adding that Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth had signed off on the new FFX small surface combatant ship as part of their effort to build what officials are calling a Golden Fleet. All right, the Golden Fleet, that's President Trump's signature thing, and he wants the battleship to be named after himself, a very Trumpian thing to do. Huntington Ingalls CEO Chris Kastner said Friday that he and his colleagues look forward to supporting the Navy on this critical program and that he has great confidence in his company's Ingalls Shipbuilding Division to execute this program. HII and the Navy didn't give a dollar amount for the contract. It's going to be big. This is going to be a big contract. Trump said the U.S.'s newer warships in years past were often smaller, but were not conducive to where we are and where we're going. Peace through strength, he said. The new ships would weigh 30,000 to 40,000 tons and could be equipped with nuclear cruise missiles, hypersonic weapons, electric rail guns and laser technology. Let me just say the nuclear cruise missiles thing, that's kind of silly. That's just hyperbole. Almost every surface ship in the U.S. Navy right now is capable of firing Tomahawks, which can be retrofit with nuclear warheads. So the whole nuclear cruise missile thing, that's just silly hyperbole. But the hypersonic weapons, that's a big deal. And the electric rail guns, that's a silly science project. The Navy canceled its rail gun project already. The Japanese are still building theirs. But the rail gun's not going to happen. And laser technology, that's referring to the new ship point defense system using lasers for intercepting incoming missiles. It's called the Helios. Pilot projects of that are already installed on some U.S. destroyers. So that's more of an interceptor versus an offensive laser. He added that the ships would be made of steel rather than aluminum and would create jobs and help revive the nation's shipbuilding prowess. So the steel versus aluminum, that's both a throwback to the littoral combat ship, which one of them, I think it was the Freedom class, I don't know which one, but one of them was made out of aluminum, which is soft and doesn't do well, makes the ship not very survivable. Also, the Ticonderoga class cruiser, in order to save weight, their superstructure is built out of aluminum, which has raised questions about how durable the ship would be if it was ever hit. This new battleship is going to be big, and it's going to be armored. It's going to be heavy. It's going to be 3 to 4 times the size of our next biggest surface combat ship, the Ticonderoga class cruiser. This battleship is going to be a freaking beast. And here's some of the specs that they're talking about. 364-cell Mark 41 VLS banks. All right, 64 times 3. That's 192 of these Mark 41 VLS cells. All right, and that's like the Navy's weapon system of choice is the VLS cells, right? An Arleigh Burke destroyer, I think, has like 96 of these. A Ticonderoga cruiser has like 120 of them. The Constellation-class frigate that we tried and kind of failed miserably to build was going to have 34. This new frigate that the Navy's building will have none, but this battleship is going to have over 180 of them. This is like a floating arsenal. It's also going to have a CPS hypersonic launch bank. That's an even bigger weapons module than the VLS cell. These new hypersonic missiles, they're still experimental. They're still in development, but they're not going to fit in the traditional Mark 41 VLS. It's going to need a bigger footprint. Right now, the only boat in the fleet that can even theoretically handle that is the Zumwalt-class destroyer, which was another disaster of an acquisition project. The new Trump-class battleship will include at least one bank of these hypersonic missiles. The SEWIP Block II modules, that's electronic warfare. The railgun, that's kind of silly because we just canceled the railgun project. That's probably not going to happen. I'm guessing the Navy's going to get rid of the railgun and probably put more either hypersonic or more VLS cells in there. Two Mark 45 guns, those are the smaller Navy guns, and outsize SPY-6 arrays. I believe they're talking about the radar. This thing is going to be gigantic, guys, absolutely gigantic. It's going to be like half the size of an aircraft carrier. I mean, an aircraft carrier displaces about 100,000 tons. A Ticonderoga cruiser displaces about 10,000. This thing is going to be 30 to 40,000. It's just massive. Now, look, this is a big problem. We have to fix our shipbuilding. Right now, this is a relative size comparison of the number of ships. And China has more ships than the United States. Now, this number is somewhat misleading, but total naval assets, the Chinese have 754 to the U.S. 440. These numbers may be a few years old, but they're close enough here. Three aircraft carriers to our 11. We have a huge carrier advantage. The same thing with the smaller. They're calling them helicopter carriers. I think we call them amphibious assault ships. We have 9 to their 4. We have more destroyers and cruisers, 81 to their 50. All right, so the big ships, we outnumber the Chinese big time in the big blue water Navy. But remember, a war over Taiwan, that's going to be a green water fight, basically littoral waters, right? Close to shores, close to the Chinese shores. And the Chinese have a lot more of the smaller ships. 47 frigates to our 0, 72 corvettes to our 26. I think they're putting the littoral combat ship in that category. We have more submarines. They have way more patrol vessels and more mine warfare vessels. So in total ship count, the Chinese outnumber us, although their ships are a lot smaller and less powerful. In total tonnage, you can see the U.S. Navy here shown in blue. We have way more total tonnage. Our ships are bigger. And so if you add the weight times the number of ships, our fleet is just much bigger than the Chinese. but the Chinese are growing here. You're shown in red. That's the Chinese total tonnage. And in yellow, they're adding the Chinese Coast Guard. I guess you could count that because the Chinese Coast Guard would probably be involved in a theoretical fight over Taiwan. But you can see our fleet is still bigger, even though we have fewer number of ships. But here's the big deal. And this is what's got to worry us. This is what has the Department of Defense and the Navy freaking out. Shipbuilding capacity. This shows you the number of ships the Chinese can build for every one hull the United States builds. Almost 300-to-1 advantage in shipbuilding capacity the Chinese have over us. So even though our fleet is currently bigger and our fleet is currently better, do the math here, guys. What does this look like in a couple of years if they have a 300-to-1 shipbuilding advantage? Now, look, keep in mind, during World War II, the United States had a 6-to-1 shipbuilding advantage over the Japanese. 6-to-1. The Chinese have a 300-to-1 shipbuilding advantage. We need to build boats again, badly. And look, this is what the frigates look like. This is the ship that we tried and failed to build. Up top here, this is the French Frem class, the French and the Italians. They built this. And the Constellation class frigate that we tried to build that turned into a freaking science project ended up looking like this. It was longer, wider, heavier. The superstructure looked different. Everything was different. The engineers couldn't help themselves. So these new boats that we're trying to build, okay, it's great. They're new ideas, but we still have the same problem. Can we just, for the love of God, get a hull in the water and make it work? Stop changing the design every 5 minutes. I guess we're going to find out. Huntington Ingalls stock ripping here at stock. Up about 0.2% this morning, $356. Looking at year-to-date, though, let's refresh this, get an accurate mark. Year-to-date, this stock is up 88%. Shipbuilding has been on the docket for quite a while now. We're finally doing something. If we ever get a trade deal done with the South Koreans, it's probably going to include money for shipbuilding. But again, full disclosure, guys, I own this one. Having a pretty good day here. All right. Also, Trump targets defense firms and weapons speed and stock buybacks. Trump wants Lockheed and Raytheon and all the big defense firms to stop buying back their stock and start building factories. You can see here, guys, the world is shifting to a wartime economy. It's happening. President Trump said Monday he wants to pressure America's largest defense contractors to speed up weapons production by investing in new facilities and ending the practice of repurchasing stocks. They want to buy back their stock. I don't want them to buy back their stock, said Accordion Hands. I want them to put the money in plants and equipment so they can build these planes fast, referring to the F-35. Speaking at his Mar-a-Lago club in Palm Beach on Monday after announcing a new class of Navy battleships that will bear his name, Trump also criticized the high pay of executives at defense firms. We'll be discussing the pay to executives where they're making $45 and $50 million a year and not being able to build quickly. They're going to make that kind of money. They have to build quickly. By repurchasing their own stock, companies reduce the number of publicly available shares, driving up their earnings per share as a way to increase their stock price and return money to shareholders. Critics of the practice say companies should instead invest that money back into facilities, workers, and other areas to improve companies. Trump's comments come as the Pentagon is intense conversations with Lockheed Martin and Raytheon over their investments in new factory space and machinery needed to surge missile production rates, an issue that has been front and center amid large U.S. weapons transfers to Ukraine, also the Red Sea consumption of missiles. The military still lacks the multi-year funding to fully meet its production targets, prompting some officials to ask defense contractors to add more capacity on spec ahead of actual orders. And those last two sentences are important here, guys. The defense contractors are saying, if you want us to build these factories, then give us orders for what those factories are going to build. We're not just going to build them just in case you need them. If you want us to build these factories, there has to be somewhere for those missiles to go. Give us some orders. And President Trump is saying, no, just build them. We want you to build them in case we need them. Stop buying back your stock. Well, executives do have an obligation to act in the best interest of their shareholders. And building factories without any orders isn't really in their best interest. This could go either way here. And look, the government just leaning on companies and saying, you shall. That's not really how we do business in America, is it? Nor is this. Where is it? Here, this one. Let's do this one next. Not Orsted. Where are you? Here we go. Trump administration halts all offshore wind projects. president's war against the wind industry has been escalating all year. The Trump administration Monday halted the construction of all U.S. offshore wind projects, a sweeping move aimed at hobbling one of the president's least favorite industries. The Interior Department said it had paused the federal leases for five projects in the work from Massachusetts to Virginia due to national security risks identified by the Department of War in recently completed classified reports. It's the most significant action the administration has taken thus far against the burgeoning U.S. businesses, which already has faced financial setbacks in recent years because of soaring costs. Today's action addresses emerging national security risks, including the rapid evolution of the relevant adversary technologies and the vulnerabilities created by large off-scale wind projects with proximity near our East Coast population centers, Interior Secretary Doug Burgum said. The decision affects Vineyard Wind 1 of off Martha's Vineyard, Revolution Wind, which is intended to deliver power to Rhode Island and Connecticut, Coastal Virginia Offshore Wind, and Sunrise Wind and Empire Wind 1 off the coast of New York. All right, so they're using national security to stop offshore windmills. Why? All right, maybe these windmills create a radar shadow. Is that really a risk? Are planes going to sneak up behind our windmills and suddenly attack our cities? Maybe they make a lot of noise and it confuses sonar, and maybe submarines could somehow sneak up on us. Okay, maybe. It's a stretch. Or maybe President Trump just doesn't like wind and he's using national security to kill the industry, which I have to say, I don't like windmills. I think windmills are a waste of time and money. But that being said, what I like shouldn't be law. So I don't like when liberals do this to nuclear plants and gas pipelines. So I shouldn't like when Republicans do this to windmills. So that's just my take on this. We have to start building something here, guys. All this NIMBYism and this, like, start a project, build it halfway, and then the other guy wins the election and we shut it down and all that money is wasted. We've got to stop doing this. Orsted stock, the biggest windmill manufacturer in the U.S. or in the world, for that matter. It's a European company. Trading at 116. I think this is Danish kroner, off a little bit today, down about 0.2%. All right, what else we got here? We've got this one. U.S. probes NVIDIA's biggest chip buyer in Southeast Asia for smuggling. Oh, that thing that isn't happening. Happened again. Look at that. Megaspeed, a once obscure spinoff of a Chinese gaming enterprise, has evolved into the second largest Southeast Asian buyer of NVIDIA chips, lifting hopes for a regional champion in the lucrative business of AI cloud computing. Gee, do you think this Chinese spinoff might be sending their chips to China? You think just maybe? But inconsistencies in Megaspeed's Southeast Asia chip inventory and overall data center footprint have caught the attention of U.S. authorities, who are investigating the ownership structure of the Singapore-based company and whether it's smuggled NVIDIA chips to China. It clearly has, which would be a major breach of curbs imposed to limit the nation's AI and military prowess, according to people familiar with the matter. Megaspeed denies any wrongdoing. And a spokesperson for NVIDIA said its inquiry into Megaspeed found no evidence of diversion. Oh, really? The company making billions of dollars selling them these chips says it doesn't look like they're doing anything wrong. Oh, a shocking turn of events. The U.S. probe could shape how American policymakers view a business model that brings NVIDIA billions of dollars in revenue and underpins a data center boom in Southeast Asia. Well, you know, we had to inflate our stock bubble, so all we had to do was sell out the country to the Chinese military, right? As long as your NVIDIA stock goes up, who cares? Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. Oh, and speaking of short NVIDIA, check out this one from Ed Zitron. Based on modeling out of the last three quarters of sales, NVIDIA appears to have shipped around 4 gigawatts worth of IT load. That's the power required to power all of the chips NVIDIA has shipped. Yet he cannot find compelling evidence that even 1 gigawatt has come online. It's likely there are millions of GPUs in warehouses waiting to be installed. And he's just saying, look, based on the installed capacity and the power required for these data centers, and based on the number of chips NVIDIA claims to have sold, there's a huge mismatch. Where are all of these GPUs? And he surmises that they're sitting in a warehouse somewhere, not being used. I've heard Michael Burry come up with the same theory. Somebody get me a picture of these warehouses full of GPUs doing nothing. Oh, I'd love it. I'd make it my freaking wallpaper on my desktop. And last but not least, the U.S. economy grows by 4.3% in the third quarter, much more than expected, delayed report shows. This is the second read of the third quarter GDP, guys, and it looks like consumer spending was up Consumers using buy now, pay later, going further into debt, putting life on the credit card. And GDP grew quite a bit here. Also, data center construction adding quite a bit. Do you really believe the economy is doing that well? No? Okay, me neither. I don't think we need to spend too much time on that. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Lex Lieberman. Thank you, Lex. He says, Jack, it's going to be $180 and maybe $500 in 5 years. We've got a silver price target from Lex, and it's an ambitious one. Wow, that is double what my cup and handle pattern tells me. Don't threaten me with a good time, Lex. That being said, $180, $500 silver. I mean, look, I own a lot of silver. Do you really want to live in a world of $500 silver? You may not have a choice. It might be coming. Hey, I'll take it. I'll take it. But something else is going to break somewhere if we do that. Armando Reyes, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says when silver hits $100, it won't be because of inflation. They're going to attempt to buy up all the silver from private owners and regular people. After that, they will start to confiscate. Confiscate what? I lost all my silver in a boating accident. Didn't you hear, Armando? I tell you, those boating accidents, they happen an awful lot around in and around confiscation schemes. I don't think confiscation is really going to happen. Certainly not door-to-door confiscation of retail silver products. Would there be some kind of like national forced settlement of cash positions in the futures market where that metal gets steered for like using the Defense Production Act to make sure we have enough silver for missiles or whatever? Theoretically, that's possible. But door-to-door confiscation of retail physical bullion products is not happening. There's a lot of people that are out there pumping that narrative. Be careful of that. I think most of the people pumping that narrative are probably trying to sell you silver at the same time. That's a little bit far-fetched. There's a lot between here and there has to happen to get that crazy. Hey, it is the 2020s, though, so we got 5 more years of this. Let's not rule it out. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel, sir. And whoa, Nacho Man, big, fat, red one. Thank you so much, Nacho Man. I really appreciate the generosity. He says, Merry Christmas, Jack and Mods. Best show on YouTube. Spread some love, Mish, and all. Spread some love, Mish. All the best and going to be a great new year. Thank you so much, Nacho Man. Very Merry Christmas to you too, sir. I really appreciate the generosity and the good thoughts this morning. Shout out to all you melon heads as well. Merry Christmas to everybody. Hope you guys have a great one. And we've got Espresso Beanies, 8930, says politicians say consumers footing AI power bill. That is exactly what consumers are doing. But hey, the good news is higher electric bills disproportionately hurts the poor more than anybody. So, you know, Sam Altman is getting rich. Bill Gates is getting rich. Jensen is getting rich. If all that costs is a couple of million poor people getting poorer, well, apparently that's a price they're willing to pay. Doesn't that make you feel good? All you people out there who are having to make a choice between keeping the lights on and buying Christmas presents this year, or maybe you're eating Hormel chili and beans instead of eating hamburger and steak because the food got too expensive and you can't afford the power bill. At the very least, OpenAI is seeking a $750 billion valuation. So Sam Altman says, give them all the power, all the water, all the money. Trust me, bro, AI is going to be awesome. Oh, it's also going to put you out of a job, apparently, but it's going to make life better for you somehow. Yeah, that's what we're being told by Silicon Valley. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I know I'm using a lot of sarcasm there, but absolutely higher power prices. They are a-coming, and they're here already. Thank you, Espresso. Hey, Mish, pumping out the memberships. There's 20 more. Thank you very much, Mish. I appreciate that very much, and thank you. Welcome all you new melon heads to the channel. Hey, look, there's Mish with 20 more. 40, do I hear 40? Man, that is a lot of memberships. We got to write that down here, 40 more. Got to keep track of them memberships. Thank you very much, Mish, and everybody. Welcome to the Melonheads, you new baby melons. Don't forget to use that super chat, and I'll read and respond to your questions live on the air. Armando says, we will see confiscation within a year if World War III hits. If not, we will see confiscation in 3 years. Mark my words, there just isn't enough. Again, I really don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. I think we will see some draconian shit if it happens. We'll see the repricing of gold. I think we'll probably see a lot of Defense Production Act. We'll see a lot of nationalization even of mining and of vital resources. But door-to-door confiscation of retail bullion products will not happen. It's not worth it. It will cost more to do than they'll get. And also, it'll be a bloodbath. So It's just not going to happen, the door-to-door thing. If you've got a huge position sitting in somebody else's vault that's like papered over and there's a paper trail behind it, and 1933 would have happened again, okay, then we could see that happen. But we're a long way from even that happening, and the door-to-door thing just ain't going to happen. Thank you very much, Armando, though, for supporting the channel. And Mr. Four Ps is back. He says, gold and silver going up. Gold and silver going up used to make me smile. It used to make you smile. Now it's that awkward smile as prices go up so quickly. You worried? Enthusiastic? Yeah. You know, that's kind of what I'm putting off here. I'm like, yeah, silver's going up. It's awesome. It's $40. That's awesome. It's $50. Oh, my God. We've been waiting for this. It's $60. What? It's $70. Holy shit. Guys, like 80, 90. Like, I mean, at some point, people are going to be worried about this, right? And again, every time we've gone vertical like this, something bad has followed. We've seen a vertical move right back lower. So where do we ultimately settle? I don't know. Just, guys, be careful on leverage here, all right? People got wiped out in 2011 when they levered up thinking that that vertical move was going to last forever. It's hard here when things go vertical. It's hard to know where it's going to stop. It's hard to know when it's going to come back down, where it's going to settle. We're done with all that, with that projection and silly analysis here. We just don't know. Things have gone irrational. Thanks again, 4Ps. Armando says, just you wait to see what happens when paper contracts fail to deliver. That's forced cash settlement. That I fully expect that to happen at some point. And you could argue that resembles confiscation. So we're getting more realistic now. Banks have sold the silver to private owners. It's going to get real bad. Also, keep in mind, all you SLV holders, guys, the only people who really own silver in SLV are the authorized participants. Everybody else has a promise. And the authorized participants, they eat first. So that is a far more feasible scenario, Armando. I would say forced cash settlement or maybe even some kind of a failure of the ETFs. That could happen. Thanks again, Armando. And Lex Lieberman is back, says, Jack, you underestimate the potential of silver. My take is 180 by 2030, 500 by 2050 or sooner. The global debt as priced in USD doesn't disappear. All right, so for that to happen, to get to numbers like that, we would have to continue on our current monetary debasement path through 2050, which right now they show no intention of changing direction. So that's feasible. That being said, if we do get to $500 silver, keep in mind we're also probably looking at like $60 a pound ground beef, and you know, a pound of chicken is $40, $45. So you know, we're in the hyperinflation scenario there. And that, like, look, that's where we're going. That's where we're heading if we don't change course. And we're not changing course. I hope by 2050 we change course. I hope. Man, I'm going to be, like, angry. I'll have no hair left. I'm going to be sitting here, guys, damn inflation. Freaking 20 years from now, shaking my fist at the air. Still nobody listening. Damn AI bubble with no teeth yet. Hey, why not? You know, one of these days, I'll throw a fit. My dentures will come flying out in the middle of a live stream. Sure, I don't have dentures yet. Oh, man, it's going to be a long 20 years, isn't it, Lex? Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Lex is back again. He says the gold to silver ratio historically backed by appeal of USD, not under $40 trillion in debt. If we trace back to the 1-for-8 ratio, oh, boy, then gold to silver ratio can half 3x, which means $70. Okay, all right, so now he's saying $70 goes 3x target of 560. So you're not getting to that $500 silver by way of hyperinflation. You're getting there by way of a collapse in the gold to silver ratio. All right. So let's do some mathing right now. We're at $4,500 gold. Let's say gold trades sideways and the gold to silver ratio collapses down to 8. That right there gets us to $562 silver at today's gold price. Now that's still an 8-to-1 gold to silver ratio. Even during the Hunt brothers, we didn't get that low. Right, I think we bottomed out at 13 when the Hunt brothers cornered the silver market. So let's indulge that number. 4,500 divided by 13. That's $346 silver. All right. So if the gold to silver ratio really does break down like that, those numbers become feasible. That would be pretty wild. And that's assuming gold doesn't move anymore. Is that really a safe assumption that gold's not going to move? Because gold's probably going to keep going higher. Again, guys, the variables are just getting crazy here. They really are. That's a great point, Lex. And I didn't even pick up on the gold to silver ratio collapse in that initial one. So thank you for clarifying. Hey, Kill Badger or Killer Badger. All right. Honey Badger doesn't give an F. Thank you, sir. Welcome to the Melonheads. Appreciate the support of the channel, sir. And we've also got Wally says, while a gold rally is great to have, we also need to remember that the price of gold is a barometer for social and economic chaos. It's a bittersweet scenario. Yes, it is. All those, by the way, how many out there? Let me know in the comments. How many of you guys are getting calls and text messages from all your friends that you told to buy gold and silver 5, 6 years ago or 10 years ago? How many of them are calling and texting you saying, man, I should have bought that metal. Can I still have some at $15 an ounce? No. I've gotten a few of those. I know at least one guy out there who's gotten a few of those, right, Pasta? Yeah, they're coming here. And again, it is important to remember that is a bittersweet scenario. Like we have seen this coming. The stackers saw this coming and prepared for it. That doesn't mean we're happy when it gets here. It just means we are glad to have prepared for it. And as we're celebrating, you know, the whole like just don't effing dance scene from The Big Short. Keep in mind what this does mean for other people. That's important to remember as well. Thank you, Wally. Good point, sir. A sobering reminder. 4P, gifted 5 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Welcome to the Melon Heads, you 5 lucky baby melons, you. Be sure and say thank you to 4P and Mish and Nacho Man. T.A. Chapman says, hi-ho, Silver. I like the shiny. I'm right there with you, brother. Hi-ho, Silver. Away! Michael, well, what do we got here? Michael Barrett Christensen. That's a mouthful. Michael B.C. says, thank you and Merry Christmas. Thank you so much, Michael, for the generosity and for supporting the channel. Merry Christmas to you and yours as well, sir. Appreciate that. Lex is back again. He says, how can you confiscate my silver if I gifted it all to my friends within the IRS allowable limits? Shucks. Those IRS allowable gifting limits and those boating accidents, and it's got to be around here somewhere. What? Silver. Yep. Good luck. Or as the, what's his name? Planet of the Apes. Mr. Heston would say, from my cold, dead hands. Get your filthy hands off my silver, you damn dirty ape. Lex Lieberman, thank you very much, sir. Who else we got here? KDM28. Thank you, KDM, for supporting the channel. It says, I stashed my silver in Victorio Peak with Coronado's gold. All right, this is a literary reference here. I don't know what Victorio's Peak is or Coronado's gold. Let's see, Victorio, Coronado. I could not tell you. That one is flying right over my rapidly balding head. I missed that reference entirely. But either way, thank you very much, KDM. My silver went down with the ship, unfortunately. The good ship, come get some. KDM, thank you, sir. Ryan Scanlon says, any offshore infrastructure is a strategic vulnerability when your enemies make more ships than you. Those power plants would need to be defended. All right, here's the one thing about the Chinese and the ships. The Chinese Navy, of all those ships that we flashed, most of them, they're small and they have tiny little legs. All right, the Chinese Navy cannot project power, not even close. All right, those little ships don't have enough range to come mess with anything off our shores. The Russian Navy is a no-show in the freaking Black Sea, which is supposed to be a Soviet lake. Nobody in the world is going to challenge our Navy near our shores, not even close. Just it's you're talking the difference in night and day. Now, a naval conflict with the Chinese where the PLARF, the People's Liberation Army Rocket Force, which is land-based, and the People's Liberation Army Air Force, the PLAF. I love these Chinese acronyms. All right. When the plan is supported by the PLARF and the PLAF, all of a sudden, the Navy has a fight on their hands, right? A fight near the Chinese coastline is different. The Chinese Navy cannot project power beyond their own coast, not even close. So this whole, like, these offshore windmills are a national security threat. No chance. No chance, guys. That's BS. Thank you very much, Ryan, for supporting the channel. Madison Hypes says, Jack's pumping Hormel again. Shake my head. I don't own any Hormel, but I'm watching that one. Hormel, Colgate, Palmolive, those are the kind of names I'm looking to buy in a market-wide sell-off. Good dividend payers. I'm not sure that Hormel dividend is safe, though. That's the one reason why I haven't bought it. Half of me is expecting a dividend cut. I know they haven't done it in 25 years, but they're spending a lot of money maintaining that dividend. At some point, the math isn't going to math. But yeah, that's one I keep an eye on, but I don't own it yet. Thanks, Lex Lee, or thanks again. Who was that? That was Madison. Yes, thank you, Madison. And thank you, Lex, again. Sorry, I don't have any silver, only this black oxide powder. Interesting. Black oxide. Silver nitrate? Is that what that is? I don't know, man. My chemical engineering is a little shady. Gigi's a chemical engineer. I'm more mechanical nuclear time frame. But yeah, again, a moment of silence for my silver. It all went down. It all went down in that boating accident. Thanks again, Lex, for supporting the channel. Henry, rifle owner, PA, says confiscate silver. You get copper jacketed lead too. That's a reason why I think door-to-door confiscation of metal isn't going to happen, guys. All right. The kind of people who stack silver are the kind of people who stack other metals that happen to reside in the same neighborhood on the periodic table. Lead, copper jacketed hollow points, that kind of stuff. It ain't worth it to go door-to-door to get $10,000 or $20,000 worth of some stacker's silver from his cold, dead hands so that you can somehow support the national bank. Not if you have to pay cops and SWAT teams to do it door-to-door. You lose money doing that. It's a losing endeavor. And so the whole door-to-door confiscation thing, it's not realistic. That's one of the reasons why. Thank you very much, Henry Rifle PA. Sassy Cowgirl, welcome to the Melonheads. Appreciate the support of the channel. Thank you. Doug Williams says, Jack, longtime lurker, first-time comment. I was a Wall Street Silver OG encouraging you to do YouTube. Really glad to see you here. Congrats to the success and Merry Christmas. Thank you very much, Doug, for sticking with the channel, for lurking for these many years. Man, we're going back to middle of 2021, the beginning of 2021 was when I made my first video on Reddit. Middle of 2021, launched a YouTube channel. I go back and I cringe at some of those earlier videos. But here we are, many moons later. I'm having fun doing this. I haven't worked a day since. Thank you very much, Doug. Appreciate you sticking around all these many moons. And here's to many more. All right, guys, just a reminder, we do have a show tomorrow on Christmas Eve, and then we will be off Thursday and Friday for the holiday. I hope you all have a Merry Christmas. We're also going to move the Patreon Zoom out to Sunday this week. We'll do that. I'll post that link shortly thereafter. And thank you, everybody, for the generosity in the Super Chats. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. Just one more reminder that I like the shiny. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.